Okay. My name is Robert Krause, and I'm from Connecticut. I'm with the Connecticut Global Action Network and the Independent Media Center in Connecticut. I'm also an adjunct professor in philosophy at Western Connecticut State University and at Quinnipiac, and I'm an instructor at Yale. I teach graduate students how to do psychotherapy. So that's basically kind of my gigs. And so I have a paper, unfortunately, to read. It's maybe not quite as dynamic as some of the things I've heard so far. So it's my kind of disclaimer. So if you don't want to hear a red paper, you should go somewhere else. Anyway, I'll just wait till everyone sits. And from an essay called How to Defend Society Against Science. He says, "The general explanation is simple. Any ideology that breaks the hold a comprehensive system of thought has on the minds of men contributes to the liberation of man. Any ideology that makes man question inherited beliefs is an aid to enlightenment. A truth that reigns without checks and balances is a tyrant who must be overthrown. And any falsehood that can aid us in the overthrow of this tyrant is to be welcomed." Introduction. In November of 1989, in Seattle, along with protesters of various ilks, a group of black-clad and hooded activists took the world stage through what was described as their violent and raucous behavior. If anyone can't hear me, please tell me, speak up, because sometimes I get quiet. Described by the media and self-described as anarchists, this group of protesters appeared to emerge from nowhere. The object of their critique, the WTO, and the newest wave of neoliberal politics also emerged from obscurity. Suddenly, all over the popular press and on the lips of people everywhere, it seemed that anarchism and the World Trade Organization were both being spoken about. However, neither the new anarchists nor neoliberalism arises from an historic vacuum. Both the new anarchism and new neoliberalism are products of specifically manifested forms of anarchism and capitalism in our contemporary world. There are several relevant threads which I will attempt to explore here. The first thread will be a history of this new anarchism, focusing on the last 30 years, with the intent of developing an understanding of the origin and context of the current anarchist movement. The second thread I will speak on will use the works of Michel Foucault, the French postmodernist philosopher, to explicate the implicit and sometimes explicitly underlying theoretical position of the new anarchists. And ultimately, because I do stand with my comrades in their conviction that deeds, not words, are the measure of the value of this movement, I will conclude with a proposition about the direction this movement should take, establishing an anarchist tradition. One difficulty that I face is centering the new anarchists in the anarchist tradition. This is a problem, I think, for two reasons. First, the scope of the movement we see today and the many different perspectives, including those which are not anarchist, that the current movement holds under its umbrella, from Greens to union members, feminists to communists, queer caucuses, members of the Global Action Network, YaBasta, the anti-capitalist convergence, and of course the infamous Black Bloc and other self-proclaimed anarchist groups or anarcho-syndicalist groups. Secondly, the equally large problem of locating any group firmly within the boundaries of an ideology that itself evaporates as it is approached. As several authors note, anarchism appears at its extremes to fall between a liberalism or a libertarianism and a socialism or a Marxism. Some anarchists leaning more or less to one side. Murray Bookchin and Noam Chomsky both have used terms like libertarian socialism to describe their idea of anarchy. Bookchin, citing Mikhail Bakunin, writes, "Liberty without socialism is privilege and injustice. Socialism without liberty is slavery and brutality." Yet another variant of anarchism is ludism, represented today most notably by John Zerzan. In the Pacific Northwest, a number of anarchist and Black Bloc groups are associated with Zerzan's views. Within these broad strokes, I think it's fairly easy to place most of the new anarchists. On the reading list of many of these activists, you'll probably find Noam Chomsky, Karl Marx, Howard Zinn. One of Murray Bookchin's books was recently proposed by a reading group in the Danbury Media Independent Media Center. But beyond these generalities, the actions and stated direction of the actions by many of the groups are patently anarchist, or at least within line of anarchist thought. For instance, the principles of unity adopted by the Connecticut Global Action Network and the Danbury Independent Media Center read, "We adopt the following principles of unity inspired and derived from those of the International People's Global Action Network and the Direct Action Network. 1. A rejection of politics and institutions which promote socially and environmentally destructive globalization. 2. A willingness to challenge undemocratic institutions that put profit before people. 3. A call to the construction of local alternatives by local people. Our focus will be providing information and skills that inspire action. 4. An organizational philosophy based on decentralization, direct action, and local autonomy. 5. A rejection of all forms of hierarchy, oppression, and exploitation. And 6. A commitment to working in solidarity, locally and internationally, to build a popular movement for radical social change and global justice. Among the chief complaints made noted are the anti-democratic means by which the neoliberal policies are enacted, and moreover, a rejection of the capitalist structure entirely. It should be noted, though, that education in abstract political theory and economic analysis among many of the activists is slight. Their focus is instead a preparation to address how specific organizations, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the FTAA, G8, etc., will affect the living people of the world and the environment. I'm going to get back to this idea of partiality later on. The new anarchists in the global action movement are related to the historical ground of anarchism through accepting a similar set of propositions about preferred forms of government and economies. They also draw from a different intellectual and historic tradition, beginning roughly with the 1968 Paris student revolts. Specifically in the period following the crush of the student revolts, the accepted theory goes that the European intellectual left lost faith in the possibility of an open revolution of a socialist nature. They then turned their focus inward, towards a critique of the self, creating postmodernism. Also from this ground, in this period, some writers have argued that the European autonomy movement arose, which is another piece of the new anarchist history. Postmodernism is distinctly American offshoot identity politics, a mode of non-revolutionary change that seeks to expand the goods provided by liberal capitalism to previously marginalized or excluded groups. Thus, the rise of groups like the National Organization of Women, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, various disability rights groups, many animal rights and environmental rights groups. Indeed, within this context, rights are the single end sought after, not changes in power or economic redistribution of wealth, or changes in underlying social structures that maintain oppressive systems of power over. Alongside these groups, however, have also been other groups with more radical agendas, often explicitly Marxist or anarchistic. For instance, there are groups like the Marxist Feminist, Anarcho-Feminist, the Black Panther Party in the 1970s, the MOVE Collective, Queer Nation, ACT UP, Earth First, and most recently the Earth Liberation Front. All have more conservative counterparts within the liberal society. These groups formed in part after lessons, the more radical groups formed in part after lessons learned from a generation of liberal politics that have steadily retreated further and further from the ends of creating a just society. We begin to see the origin of the new anarchists in a context where progress has been made through gains in political rights within lawmaking structures. Disillusioned with the liberal gains in rights and concurrent losses in power and economic status, disillusioned with conservative attempts to save the spotted owl while our national forests are privatized and plundered and our oceans are devastated, all with the promise of a better world through small changes within a social and economic system that is itself fundamentally the problem. The new anarchists are attempting more direct methods of making change and of raising public consciousness of the problems of neoliberalism. But now I'd like to turn the discussion to critique in order to focus on how the method of critique of the new anarchists draw on similar sources but also differ from the old left. I believe that the works of Michel Foucault both underlie at least some of the contextual framework of the new anarchists and can add a significant and interesting piece for anarchism as a whole. An orthodox critique of capitalism, the sort written by Karl Marx or Mikhail Bakunin or Peter Kropotkin, is a critique of a system that exploits workers through wage slavery. Exploitation is the difference between the value of labor and the wage received by the worker, creating profit for the owners of capital. The profit is made by effectively stealing, that is, not paying the laborer the full value of his or her labor. Regardless, we use Marx's labor theory of value to describe this, or Kropotkin's discussion of labor as social labor. The critique is implicitly or explicitly shared by many of the anti-capitalist protesters, and is a chief critique used to argue against the neoliberal agenda. Further, anti-capitalist protesters share the orthodox critique of institutions like governments and organizations like the World Trade Organization, World Bank, and International Monetary Fund, believing that they exist for the sake of promoting the interest of the ruling class. As Marx and Engels write, the executive of the modern state is but a committee for managing the common affairs of the whole bourgeoisie. We see clear evidence of the truth of this claim as we look to the voting record of the WTO that has ruled consistently against environmentalist complaints, against workers' rights, and against laws that the democratically elected bodies pass. This is especially true when complaints, rights, or laws have come into conflict with free trade and growth, the singular measure of good in the neoliberal agenda. The new anarchist and anti-capitalist protesters have yet another critique, which they apply as well. Drawing from the postmodernist and identity politics, we see a critique of consumption, the construction of the individual under late capitalism, and a critique of universalism or foundationalism. The orthodox left draws from works like Capital, making criticisms of capitalist modes of production. The new anarchist and anti-capitalist protesters, following from the postmodernists, have been greatly influenced by critiques of consumption, originating in Marx's Grundrisse. The consumption side of the critique, dropped by post-war Marxists and some anarchists, was picked up by the postmodernists, especially Althusser and Baudrillard. These criticisms are particularly significant in late capitalism, where the cultivation of infinite desires, all pre-commodified and pre-packaged as absolute need, fuels the markets with the market's aim to fuels the free market's aim to continuously open new markets both here and abroad. In a world where citizens have been transformed into consumers as a primary mode of identification, freedom amounts to the choice of product selection. It is here that Foucault sets out to analyze the details of how capitalism creates its subjects. But in order to get to that place where it's reasonable to address this, I should first like to address a criticism that various anarchists have made of Foucault. After debating with Foucault, Chomsky reportedly remarked that Foucault was the most amoral person he had ever met. But it's perhaps John Zerzan who sums up anarchist and orthodox left suspicions about Foucault and postmodernism best when he writes, "Thus, the liberal Habermas claims postmodernist thinkers like Foucault, Deleuze, and Lyotard are neoconservative for offering no consistent argumentation to move in one social direction rather than another. In sum, much of the left view Foucault's discussion of the ubiquity of power formulated in his concept biopower and his reluctance to make serious arguments for specific criteria by which we may decide how to direct our actions as political impotents, or worse yet, as providing justification for oppressive structures or even atrocities." The origin of Foucault's reluctance stems from his attempt to avoid metaphysical doubling. Metaphysical doubling entails either explicitly or implicitly making claims about the nature of reality or being human. This Foucault sees as a serious problem because statements about essences or natures inevitably have the result of generalizing onto the whole attributes of some part of the whole. This then leads to the problem of imposing on individuals or groups with claims of objective truth, norms or goods that are in fact oppressive. These sorts of truth claims then are really shown to be power claims. The classic example of this is Marx's criticism of Kant in the German Ideology. Kant, in his Metaphysics of Morals, seeks to provide the a priori foundations for morality, making ethics a science so that any rational person can arrive at objectively true decisions about moral judgments. Kant's conclusion was that it was his statement of the categorical imperative, the singular moral law, which Kant argued was atemporal and acontextual, that is, would resolve moral judgments whenever dilemmas arose and wherever. Marx then argues that what Kant was actually doing was providing for the moral underpinnings of the Western liberal capitalist state and for bourgeoisie capitalism. Why is that? How's that? Consider the almost univocal discourse in liberal politics since the fall of the Berlin Wall, centering on discussions of rights. Marx's point is that as long as our discussions center on rights, in an ideological system where all men are created equal, where they are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, etc., etc., and so on, we will not be addressing power differentials. That is, as long as it is held that Bill Gates and a given homeless person have equal rights, we will never get to the point of addressing the fundamental inequity. Kant's proposal universalized, that is, generalized to all persons, certain fundamental attributes while neglecting others. Thus, with an appeal to truth, he justifies an oppressive power differential. Marx, however, suffers from a similar problem. Marx and Marxists universalize class struggle and ideal social relations. Further, Marx's dialectical materialism prophesizes a necessary direction that history moves in. That is, he makes a universal claim about the nature of reality without being able to stand outside of reality itself to ground his claim. Thus, assertions, theories, or propositions that generalize to a whole, all people, humanity, nature, etc., without being grounded outside, are knowledge claims that present a strong likelihood for masking actual claims to power. This is why Foucault takes such care not to make philosophical claims that are explicitly or implicitly universal. This, however, does not mean that we are left as persons with political commitments unable to use Foucault's analysis of how late capitalism works to our ends. Nor does it mean that Foucault himself doesn't point in directions that would be helpful for us to resist or transgress against the totalitarian ends of capitalism. In fact, he does point us in such directions, arguing that fascism is ultimately the desire in each of us to be led. Foucault, in his introduction to Deleuze and Guattari's work Anti-Oedipus, writes, quote, "How does one keep from being fascist, even, especially, when one believes oneself to be a revolutionary militant? How do we rid our speech acts, our speech and our acts and our hearts and our pleasures of fascism? How do we ferret out the fascism that is ingrained in our behavior?" Foucault then continues with a list of essential principles that live in counter to all forms of fascism would involve, including freeing political action from all unitary and totalizing paranoia, developing action, thought, and desire by proliferation, juxtaposition, disjunction, and not by subdivision and pyramidal hierarchicalization. Withdraw allegiances from the old categories of the negative, law, limit, castration, lacuna, which Western thought has so long held sacred as a form of power and as access to reality. Prefer what is positive and multiple, difference over uniformity, flows over unities, mobile arrangements over systems. Believe that what is productive is not sedentary, but nomadic. Do not think that one has to be sad in order to be a militant, even though the thing one is fighting is abominable. It is the connection of desire to reality, and not its retreat into the forms of representation, that possesses revolutionary force. He goes on from there, finally, to conclude with, do not become enamored of power. Foucault is particularly interested in the way in which late capitalism produces individual subjects through a process of increased normalization. This is enacted largely by social scientists who study human behavior, humans and their behaviors, creating classificatory systems that then become new axes for us to self-regulate and self-monitor. Additionally, It is through this process of self-monitoring and through increased surveillance or the appearance of surveillance that we become the apparatus of our own oppression. Normalization and surveillance for Foucault are ultimately about increased social control and productivity. Consuming producers, producing consumers, whose alienation is cultivated not only in the Marxist sense in the workplace, but in the existentialist sense, in lives made more and more disconnected through the individualization and suburbanization of life, so that we all have more and more crap and think that having more crap will ultimately scratch that itch, but it won't. Foucault can't ultimately tell us which way to move forward, but he does tell us a way to begin by locating the points in ourselves where we have internalized the social grid or what is good and true, and it is here that it is possible to make change. Foucault's, again, quoting, "We have to be at the frontiers to transform the critique conducted in the form of necessary limitation into a practical critique that takes the form of possible transgression. This entails an obvious consequence, that criticism is no longer going to be practiced in the search for formal structures with universal values, but rather as a historical investigation into the events that have led us to constitute ourselves and to recognize ourselves as subjects of what we are doing, thinking, and saying." In this discussion of Foucault, I do not want to suggest that all or even most of the protesters are deliberately enacting some new system of political critique that they know to be founded in Foucault. Though indeed some do cite Foucault in their work, including Yabasta's New York City website. And also Jesse Ramirez Cuevas writes in an article entitled "The Body as a Weapon for Civil Disobedience," quote, "We are not armed. We are acting as citizens, putting our persons at risk in order to demonstrate that the democracy of the IMF and World Bank is tanks and an armed police. We are not criminals. They are suppressing citizens exercising their rights. We want to show that it is possible to rebel against the order by using our bodies as weapons. If, as Foucault wrote, the body is the object of the power's microphysics, if all social and political control exercises its mastery of the body, if the market economy has converted the bodies into merchandise, the white monkeys and the Italian protest group Tutte Bianche have called for a rebellion of bodies against world power." Rather than argue that protesters consciously use a Foucauldian critique, my discussion here has two parts. Firstly, Foucault and the postmodernists have deeply influenced liberal and left politics for the last 20 years, and this round of political activism inevitably draws from that source. Secondly, I'm arguing that Foucault in particular offers specific critical tools and observations that are relevant to our project as anarchists. We can see evidence of Foucault's influence in the demonstrations' overall lack of uniform or overriding declared ideology, resulting from a suspicion of grand meta-narratives or universal statements. From an anarchist perspective, we can see the suspicion of meta-narratives as being a criticism of attempts to provide deontological, top-down, or hierarchical claims of knowledge or truth. This suspicion involves the concern that any particular meta-narrative will inevitably favor some groups over others and will often impose a set of specific values, usually those of the dominant culture, on others. This is the intellectual foundation of the anti-imperialist, anti-hierarchical thrust of the global actions. Again, Foucault's discussion of how late capitalism uses social sciences to provide statistical criteria by which we as masses can be divided up, labeled, and placed into groups of normals and deviants. These locuses are then punished or cured with the ultimate aim of creating a more efficient and productive workforce. We can see evidence of this trend of disciplining and punishing and increased surveillance currently in the increase in the U.S. prison population, the largest in the world, in the continual increase in surveillance of society and its members through systems like Echelon, through cameras just about everywhere, to the criminalization of poverty and of youth, and through the progressive limitations on First Amendment rights to publicly assemble and to speak. All of these are ways that late 20th century capitalism, 21st century capitalism, is employing the central state to discipline and punish its dissenters, or those which are not as productive, forcing everyone to conform to the neoliberal expectation of producers and consumers. In such a system, Foucault suggests that what we must begin to do is find what the limits are, both within ourselves and that we have internalized, and exterior to ourselves, so that then we know where we can push, how to push, and where and how to transgress. Which is where we see groups like the Anti-Capitalist Convergence, CLAC and CASA, the Global Action Networks, and YaBasta today. One, using their bodies directly to test the possible limits. Two, thus increasing awareness of the existing social, political, and economic system, which is the box, which we are in. Three, exposing how the state will operate through the police and media. And four, ultimately, how, where, and when we can and should transgress the boundaries to make real change. This view of biopower moves away from the liberal position of powerlessness and victimhood of the exploited and oppressed. It says that we are all in power relationships. We are all dominated and oppressed to the degree that we as individuals and collectively allow ourselves to be. We assert our presence and our power to the degree we resist, and we can create our future, forcing change through the weight of our numbers and our willingness to resist their program. Third thread, proposing directions. Where is this promised land? The land of milk and honey that we were told as children was our inheritance living in a free society, a society we were told so many have fought and died for. I believe that each generation must renew its covenant with history and with the future, with commitments to fight against whatever form of tyranny have been manifested. Today, our tyranny is a capitalist system that seeks to be the singular hegemonic power of the world, marketing lifestyles to some and relegating torturous and empty lives to multitudes. I'm not against building a global community at all, and I'm not against technology being employed to better the lives of humans, but we must understand that technology itself is not value neutral. The newer forms of technology that have been created by a capitalist system to serve their ends. And while we may make use of the specific form with our listservs, cell phones, organizing demonstrations, political actions, we must maintain the consciousness that these technologies were designed for specific ends, and as such they have shown not to better our lives through reduced workloads or through greater prosperity. Rather, they are used to allow us to do work from anywhere now. So when thinking about directions forward, we must consider the role of technology being produced and controlled by those with the intent of freeing humans from empty tasks, reducing the time we spend working so we can build societies where we are workers in the morning and poets in the afternoon. Secondly, we must use our technologies to help the poor develop without the environmentally catastrophic impact of European and American development. It is immoral for us to stand in the way of the development of parts of the world where people want and need the benefits of the modern world, health, food, access to information, ability to direct their own lives. But we are faced with a development where incredible damage could be done to the environment if it is pursued in the way that we in the West have pursued it. We must pursue globalization, but we must develop and plan for the form in which it will take place. The form in which it must take place is to stand ready and able to protect the interests of the people against the interests of large centralized bodies, be they governments, churches, corporations, or whatever new form will arise. We must expose the capitalist agenda at every turn, revealing it to the people to raise their awareness of the degree to which their freedom and prosperity rests in the backs of the very poor. To do this, the new anarchists and the anti-capitalist protesters are attempting to form alternative media and reporting sources. For instance, the independent media centers are one step forward in securing a non-corporate space for the reporting of worldwide events. We must continue this and expand our reach to radio stations and televisions, so that next to the New York Times and New York Times corporate newspaper in each home is a critique of the stories they feel is fit to print, and the stories the New York Times would never print. Our best weapon in this regard is the complete telling of the truth while being upfront with our agendas. Next, we must begin to publicly disseminate positive visions for the future that compete with the capitalist vision. Along with every critique that we offer of a neoliberal agenda, we must also offer an alternative. If we say that a dam being built in location X would be environmentally harmful, we must then present a viable alternative that is more acceptable and would adequately fulfill the needs of the people for whom this dam purportedly would serve. Likewise, we must clearly and compellingly outline the neoliberal agenda, offering both objections and alternatives to it. We must demand that in a prosperous world where there is enough food to feed everyone, everyone be fed, that this would be the measure of progress worthy of the word. Toward these ends, we must demand the return of and further development of social safety nets that provide for such goods as universal health care, education, housing, as essential components of a good society. But we must not stop there. We must begin to act through developing permanent autonomous zones that begin to provide for socialism from the ground up, so that we invigorate existing and develop new housing, food, healthcare, and daycare co-ops, so that we open our own healthcare clinics and provide for community education. Starting small in our own communities, building networks of such communities, we can begin the process of powerfully taking back the right of self-determination and to collective determination of our communities. Lastly, I think that healthcare provisions are a strategically central one. Because as long as healthcare is provisionally available to those who work a full-time job, 40 hours plus a week, with 2 weeks vacation a year, the capitalist structure has a powerfully coercive weapon that will prevent people from having enough space in their lives to risk being more politically involved, or to make radical changes in their values or the way that they live their lives. I believe that a strong push towards universal health coverage has a possibility to radicalize our society, perhaps more than any other singular thing we can do at this point. To conclude, earlier I said that the anti-capitalist protesters made up two critiques, one which they drew from Marx, Kropotkin, and Bakunin. This one is a critique of capitalist wage labor system of production. They also employed a critique which they draw from later thinkers that include a critique of foundationalism or universalism, consumption, and capitalist attempts to create the self-identity of people as consumers and producers. There is a problematic tension between these two critiques, which I believe we are left to reconcile. The problem is that the old guard left critique is necessarily universal, imparting a particular set of values without the ability to justify them externally. To be conceptually consistent and, moreover, as a synthesis for future political theorization, we must reconcile the tension between critiques of production and those of consumption, construction of the self by capitalism, and foundationalism. Reconciling this tension will strengthen our cohesion as the political left. It will deepen our critique of capitalism, and I believe ultimately it will be a central move towards a more just world. Thank you.